Welcome to another episode of Roll or Die. Today's guest is actually a request from someone else who we are very keen to have on the show. Lance, thanks for the suggestion. Legend. We have the main man here. We're looking forward to getting to know him a bit. He's an expat from Australia, so a lot of the OGs around should know this guy. And for all of our other listeners, looking forward to getting to know him. He's a black belt who has kind of travel the world. At the moment, he's based in Bangkok. His name is Adam Shahir Kaum, and thanks for joining us, Adam.
No worries, guys. Pleasure to be here.
Awesome, brother. Yeah. So where are you right now? Where are you in the world?
Right now, I'm located in Bangkok, Thailand, near the Sukhumvit area, which is the CBD area in Bangkok.
Nice, man. And what's the have you been training at this point? Like, have you been, I don't know how long you've been back there, because you were just telling us before the show that you've been moving around a bit, but are you fully immersed back in the scene there?
Yeah, trying to get back into the groove here, things in Bangkok. So officially, I'm back in Bangkok. I've been back in Bangkok now, let's see. I say like a week now. Like, it's official now that I'm back in Bangkok. Yeah, so it's fresh. Hot out the oven.
Awesome. And you were telling us before the show too that you were previously the head coach at Evolve MMA in Singapore. So that's a pretty big gym. That's pretty known for people on the scene. How long were you there? And then what brought you back to Bangkok?
Before I came back to Bangkok, I'd say around 2 years.
Yeah,
around 2 years.
And tell us about your time there in Singapore. Like, how was that? What's the scene like over there?
Hectic. No. Listen. It was. It's a job that I think that if you're passionate about, you know, you don't really work, right? It's something that you do. And for me, it's I don't switch off my brain. So like, I'm always constantly thinking about positions, techniques, strategies, fights, you know, about the athletes that I'm working with, about the opponents. And then when I'm not thinking about that, I'm thinking about jiu-jitsu, mainly gi. I love gi. I'm a bit of a traditionalist that way, but I love no gi, right? But I reckon you could do gi till you're 90 plus, you know, like
getting on the mat. My fingers say otherwise.
Adam. Oh, yeah, I feel you. I feel you 100%. I feel you 100%. So that's when you start mixing up no gi grips in the gi situation.
Yes.
I'm learning that. Alas, too late. I didn't do that in the early days, but yeah, I hear you.
I'll just hold on a little longer.
That's it.
And then like, I shouldn't have held on that long.
Can I please have my finger back? I just need those two fingers back.
Yes.
Okay. Let me reset that finger. Yep, we're good to go.
Yeah.
Exactly. So you taught jiu-jitsu in like 3 countries or something like that. Is that right? 4 countries?
I've taught jiu-jitsu in back home, Australia. Taught jiu-jitsu in Malaysia, Philippines, Korea, Japan, Brazil.
Wow.
States. Else? South Africa.
Wow. My husband's South African. That's fantastic.
Mm. Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't care what they say. We still make better bobbies.
There's every very long.
Every country they have got
the duck.
A Brazilian who's got the bobbies.
Yeah.
No, you know, I was really surprised. Long.
They go for like 3-4 hours. Like, give me the food.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But in Cape Town, I felt like there were parts in Cape Town that were like identical to Sydney and Melbourne. Just civil engineering. It was a bit bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%.
I just want to go back to my question here, right? Because you've taught.
I didn't do it, but yep.
No, you've done. Yeah. Okay. You did tell
reflex,
us.
Reflex, sorry.
Yeah. Your reflex from growing up as a, what did you say? You were when you grew up?
Number five in a seven family.
Wow. So you cop the blame for a lot of things.
Was that all boys?
And funny enough, the youngest is the best at getting away with everything because he just saw six of us in a row going, yeah, nah, not going to do that. Those mistakes.
Yeah, right.
Yes. Yeah, he learned from your mistakes. Interesting. And Adam, just go back as well. You were saying you prefer the gi, but you actually have pretty a history of MMA. Like you're a very accomplished MMA fighter as well. So a lot of the time, people doing MMA don't train in the gi.
Lucky.
What are your thoughts around that? Like people that do MMA that you know they don't really believe in the gi, but you disagree?
I wouldn't say to strongly disagree. I just think you miss out on a lot. Do you know what I mean?
Mm.
And then here's my stance on it, right? Name me one ADCC champ that isn't very good in a gi. Silence. That's why I said this always.
Yeah.
Right? Because it is a part of the foundation. You generally hear people like, another one is that it's not street worthy, right? I used to work as a doorman. Mind you, I wasn't the biggest doorman, but it's always handy to have big fellows with you. But I've never, not once, right, had to deal with a confrontation where the bloke just walked up to me with spats and a rash guard. I mean, if someone walks up to you in the street with spats and a rash guard, you should be intelligent enough to figure out, that's not a good idea. And make space.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, you know, the toughs that I've gone into, right, like the blokes always want a jacket or a shirt, or even on the beach, right? Mm. Like, you can, not that I'm advocating that you should go out and do this, but you can still choke someone with a singlet.
Yeah.
You can still choke someone with your own gi. Mm. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do you know? Oh, yes. Like, mate, like, had guys coming up going, I'm about to stab you. Take off my jacket. What? Mm. Do you know what I mean? Make distance. Yeah. So, it's beneficial.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And plus, I don't know how long you've been in the game, Anton, but I remember when doing no gi was more like back in the days where we were doing Vale Tudo, right?
Wow.
And I'm telling you, there's nothing like the experience of having a big, sweaty Brazilian who's rugged up, right? And all he's got is Speedos on. I mean, the sweat and the hair follicles, you know, like, no,
absolutely.
Fun. And you always have that training partner. Oh, yeah, I forgot to bring my rashi. And then you're like, yeah, but you got a carpet for a front chest. So, like, yeah. How about you just don the gi and we go sambo for a bit? You know,
It's a protective layer, isn't it? It's a protective layer.
100%.
You know, yeah. Lincoln Hancock, your coach, Kim, said that he thinks that the whole gi, no gi debate is getting boring. But I believe that Adam has taken the boring side of this debate here today. That's for sure.
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty funny, man. You're a funny guy. So I would love to know. Like going back to my question from before, you've taught jiu-jitsu in all of these places and other things as well. Is from a cultural perspective, are there things that like, have you just made assumptions and then it's really backfired or is teaching jiu-jitsu the same wherever you go? Like, is this a global language, like the language of love or is it something else?
It's the language of pain. You know, so.
Yes, it is.
I mean, there's a lot of factors that are involved, especially because it's from my personal experience, right? So I grew up in a very multicultural household, right? I mean, my dad's background, so Afghan, Pakistani, Malay, right? And then mom, right? Mom's red-haired, green-eyed, white, right? Australian, Irish, Scottish, right? So, I mean, Yeah, listen, Ramadan and Christmas were always interesting, right? So, and then to boot, my grandmother's side was Catholic, and my grandfather's side was Protestant, right? Mm. So, I think I grew up with a sense of cultural sensitivity. So, I think when I'd get into a room, I could read it quite well.
Yeah,
right. And I always think like, don't ever assume, right? So, like, you never go like. Like growing up in Sydney, right? You never go up to Greek and go, yeah, I like 5 beers, thank you. Because that is like up yours, right? Mm. So you'd be going, because you see them go, nah. And then they'll say the following words, so mm-hmm. I'm not going to repeat, right? But, you know, so like little things like that. I just got taught also, don't assume, do your homework, and always ask, right? Mm. Because like sometimes in some particular cultures, you get it's labeled like silly to ask, right? But I reckon it's even sillier when you make a mistake that
yeah.
it could have been prevented just by simply asking and asking respectfully. That's mm-hmm. it, right? Mm-hmm. So
yeah, and actually taking that to jiu-jitsu, I noticed that in clubs where people encouraged to ask a lot of questions seems to be like those clubs that do. But well, like that, you should be at a
class. I always say the most dumbest question in class, provided that you're not asking me what's the price of tea in China right now, mm-hmm. right? But it's jiu-jitsu related. The dumbest question was the one that didn't get asked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah.
But there's a caveat, right? Because if you're an instructor, you time management, right, and also a flow of attention. Right. So you have to be an educator and an entertainer. Mm. Right. Because you can be like completely brilliant. Right. But if you're as dry as paper, it's like,
yeah,
it's right. So, you know, and you got to understand, like when people are paying you for your time, right, you have a responsibility. To make that experience 45 minutes to an hour to an half an hour, that's on you, on mm-hmm. how you coordinate the class, on how you conduct the class, how you engage with the class, you know, how you try to make sure that also on top of that, that not only you're providing a challenging educational environment, that it's also a safe space, right? Mm-hmm. So you also have to be aware on how you manage roles, like, well, don't set Johnny, who plays for the Rabbitohs, with, you know, like Auntie Michelle Wong, who runs a grocery store. Like, you just mm-hmm. you know, you got to be intelligent on that coordination as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's important that you have that sense of sensitivity, right? And also education. It depends on your environment and also. Other factors like, did you have a good instructor that was not just only interested in making you a really good competitor, mm. but a jiu-jitsu representative that's able to help pass on, no, like pass on the knowledge. I'm not being a smarty pants when I'm saying it, but you know, like you're not just passing on knowledge on technique, you're also passing on gym culture, which is super important, right? Mm. So, you want to make sure that, you just make sure that it's safe. It's safe enough to feel comfortable, but challenging enough to where it's progressive.
Mm. Yeah, for sure.
I love that, man. Like I was driving in the car with my daughter the other day and I off the cuff said, there's no stupid questions. And she said, that is bullshit. There are stupid questions. And I thought, and I it took
timing.
There are
timing and location.
Yeah, that's right. So that is one of the things I would like to say I would like to explore with you guys is like, what would be a good way for students to, like, as Kim said, the best environments are where the students are asking questions. What would be
encouraged? Yeah.
So it should be encouraged, but how do the best students ask the best questions? That's my question for you guys. You got anything, any thoughts on that?
How, How do the students ask the how do the best students? Is that it?
Well, what can we see about the students who do progress well? Like, what kind of questions do they ask, for example? Because I know I've asked some really dumb questions, and probably because I'm trying to like impress my coach or make it clear to some, I don't know what the hell I'm doing sometimes when I was in my earlier belts, but I'm wondering, like, do you guys have any views over time? We've seen so many people coming through the ranks in jiu-jitsu. How do you ask a good question in a class full of jiu-jitsu people so as not to derail the class and make it a better class? Any ideas?
Yeah. So that's on the coach, right? And listen, when I say that's on the coach, it's not a guilt trip, right? As I'm saying that, well, maybe the coach didn't have the opportunity to experience like really good teachers. And I am getting old.
We all are, bro. You're in good company.
You're still younger than us, Adam. Don't worry.
Sweet.
Anton's master's 5 now, and I'm nearly there too. So yeah,
I'm master's 4.
Oh, yeah, same. Baby. If you want me to change your nappy, just let me know, brother.
I've had the experience where I've been with coaches that are remarkable teachers, maybe not the best competitors for whatever reason, and coaches that have a mountain of experience with competing, being world champions, right? And I walked out of that training session or class or get together or role, and I'm thinking, what happened, right? Like, on top of that, like, you with being the instructor, like, I understand that dilemma. Like, you want to, like, if you really love jiu-jitsu, right, or love anything that you do, and you're partaking in the experience of teaching, it's tough, eh? Like, I'm not saying it's easy, right? It can be challenging, especially when you have to manage time, right? When you're teaching, you want to give enough space for questions, right? But you also have to make sure that the student is there when they're watching you and listening to you teach, that they're also digesting what you're trying to show, right? So that's the gambit, right? You're trying to do that balancing act, right? And Professor Libra over here, terrible, right? Because I'm always critiquing, is that enough? Was that good enough? You know, did I do it well enough? Did he get it? Why is he asking so many questions? This guy's really frustrating. I'm getting distracted. I got to deal with the rest of the group. So you also have to recognize what group you're dealing with. Is it with the advanced guys, right? If it's with the advanced guys, you know, they can't get too butthurt when you're like, mate, you really didn't get it. You know, like when you're throwing jokes around. But with beginners, you cannot let them feel that they get, like, with beginners, you have to be extra sensitive because they're already walking in with this backdrop of doubt, right?
Yeah.
I mean, beginners, like, you gotta understand, like, if you're like us that like, I'll have a crack at it, and they go, oh, I quite like this, even the guy's like, what, 110 kilos, and he just sat on me from mount for, you know, 15 minutes. I'm that stubborn personality, like, I'm going to come back and I'm going to get you and I'm going to figure out how to do it better. And then that kind of washes away. And they're like, hey, Bill, come on, let's roll. And then, you know, and then it progresses from there. And the next thing you know, 30 years, you've been in the game. You're like, oh, wow. But the thing is that beginners will automatically, because they're already walking in with a whole bunch of doubt, right? And you got to think about the courage that you walk in, especially during in the 80s, 90s, right? We were lunatics, right? Doing jiu-jitsu. And you have someone that pops their head in and goes, oh, this looks interesting. And you see blokes flying across the mat and guys putting kimonos to the back of the head. You know, and you're like, yeah, thanks. I was just looking for a fitness gym. You know what I mean? So you always gotta deal with that, right? So they will be so easy to disqualify themselves at the drop of a hat, especially when you're using vocab that they have no idea about.
Yeah.
Do you know? Like, yeah. Today, fellas, we're doing the Kimura. And this is what it is. Do you know what I mean? Mm. Like, I'll tell you a really funny experience. One day, it was the beginner's class. And one of these white belts walked up and goes, Coach, can you show me the Kimura with the legs? Right? And I'm thinking, yeah, see, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Right. And I'm thinking, oh yeah, sure. I'll just show it to you after class. And I was perplexed. I'm thinking, I have seen nearly everything under the sun. What the hell is the Kimura with the legs? He forgot about it at the end of the class, right? And I'm there, and I'm thinking, because my wife's she's about to get a second degree in jiu-jitsu, so she's a black belt as well, right?
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, Jim, come over here. And I'm trying to think how to do this really complex maneuver with my feet on how to imitate the Kimura, right? And she's looking at me like, why don't you just ask him? And I'm like, my ego just couldn't take it. I was up on the computer looking up and I typed in Kimura with legs. You know what it was?
What was it?
The omoplata. The perspective that he saw it was essentially what a shoulder lock.
Wow.
Yes,
but it's an entanglement with the legs.
Wow. Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
So and I grabbed him and I was like, "Hey,
wow.
Show me what this bloody Kimura is with the legs." No, with the feet.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And he was like, "Oh, it's like this." And I was like, you know when you do one of these ones? But I got into this self-abusive state. All you had to do was just ask, "Can you just explain to me what you're talking about?" But mate, I couldn't handle it, eh?
We've only got a bit over 7 minutes, Adam, but can you give us, we always ask this of all, I guess, how you discovered jiu-jitsu, how you got started? You've got a pretty extensive martial arts background. Like, what brought you to jiu-jitsu?
Sounds like pretty negative when I think about it. So I got into a bit of a biff outside on New South Head Road, specifically in front of the Sheaf Hotel. Mm. And so what happened was I was always something stupid, you know, when you're young. And so I wouldn't back down, right? And I thought, Taekwondo champ, Kyokushin, trains judo. I got this, right? So the guy grabbed me and I went and did ogoshi, right? Bam. And I threw him down. But then we rolled. So in my head, I'm like, Ippon, sweet. I'm going to get the Osai Komi. But I rolled, right? I overcommitted on the throw. And then the guy, I had him in like the standard headlock, right? Because I was panicking. I was like, oh, what happened there? And then the guy mounted, right? And then the guy mounted me and then another bloke came up and he had his boot to my face.
Wow. Right?
And I was just like, oh, this is not good. And I wrapped the guy's head. And it sounds violent, but you gotta understand, I was panicking, right? Yeah. So I got him in a headlock and I stuck my thumb in, I reached around and I fish hooked him, right?
Yeah.
And I was using the bloke's head, not as a shield, not to get stomped on. Wow. And then my late brother comes in and picks up the guy, pulls him off. And then I was like, all right, you know, wow. Let's just make our way home now. Right. And I couldn't sleep that night. You know, I think I was around 18, 19. I was like, all of that, just what?
Mm.
Right. And I think I was like a blue belt in judo at the time. So I couldn't sleep. And I had this constant nag. Right. I had this constant nag, like, you know, like, what do I need to never feel like that again?
Mm.
I know 30 years down the line was swallow your ego, and then everything would have been all right. But what happened was so I went back home to my other home, right, to Malaysia during Chrissy. And back then it was all like videotapes, right? So we went down to the local night bazaar where they had like, they all had like copied videotapes, you know, like original copies, you know, of the latest movies. You can, and I was looking through the video cassette, and this image of a red octagon in a gladiator with a red skirt, golden belt doing this. I was like, oh, this looks interesting. And I flipped it over, and it was that, I had that picture of that guy. I think his name's Scott Morris, the ninja guy. It was in UFC 2. Mm-hmm. And he fought that guy, Pat Smith, and, you know, like broken orbital, fractured cheekbone, nose across here, blood running down his face. And I'm thinking, what is this? Go home, put it on the videotape, and I just went, yes, this is what I have to learn. You know, but the striker in me, where I was like, there's got to be a way to beat this. I mean, there's this South American bloke in a gi, like, what, 80 plus kilos, and he's just wiping the floor with everyone, right? So then when I get back, to Sydney, I'm going through every club going, do you teach Brazilian jiu-jitsu? Do you teach Brazilian jiu-jitsu? Do you teach Brazilian jiu-jitsu? I was, oh, will you teach jiu-jitsu? I said, no, it's Brazilian jiu-jitsu, right? So, and by pure luck, I had given up looking for jiu-jitsu at the time. I think this was like 93, 94, right. So went and started Aikido, Yoshingan Aikido, with an instructor by the name of Aga Manhao. And he was teaching in a martial arts boxing gym back in the day. I think the gym was called City Boxing. Boxing Works. Mm-hmm. And it was on, if I remember, not Castle Ray Street. I think it was on Elizabeth Street in the city.
Mm.
Yeah. And then I walk in, and then I'm just about to walk in. I've come early for the class, right? That's the only thing I ever used to really turn up early for. Uni, homework, events, nah. But training.
Yeah.
On point. But oh, and my birthday. My mom said that was the only thing I was ever on time or early for.
I will note you showed up late for this podcast as well,
yes,
brother.
So
I
was like, true. Oh,
no, now the whole world's gonna know. But I'm a man of my word when it comes to business and jiu-jitsu.
That's right. And class, man. I got it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So then, I was on time when I had to register my marriage. So yeah, I was on time for that. And my daughter's birthday. Anyway. So so I walked in and there were these guys rolling around. And I was thinking, good fortune has blessed me.
Wow.
And then so just as the guys were coming off the mat, I said, oh, are you guys doing jiu-jitsu? Said, yeah, but we're fighters from Pancras, hybrid wrestling, right? So it was guys like Uncle Larry, Larry Papadopoulos, and then Alex Cook, and then Krista Weaver, and then there was another guy there. Anyway, so, and then it just happened from there. Then Krista Weaver started his own club, and we started from there. Krista Weaver then introduced us to Peter DeBean, and then Peter DeBean introduced us to Carlinhos Gracie, Gordo, Mastro Feitosa. And then after that, because we were in Sydney, right? And Peter DeBean's from Victoria, from
Torquay and Melbourne.
Torquay, that's right. Yeah. Beach,
he's
Torquay.
My first coach. Yeah.
So I used to ask Pete a lot of questions when I was in, whenever I was in Melbourne, right?
And that's Torquay. How you know Lance?
No, I knew Lance from Peter Beam, but our relationship grew from him breaking my arm in competition.
Oh, wow.
That's some nice bonding, yeah? That's how you get to know. Yeah.
There's nothing like that kind of bonding ever in the whole world that you can say, mate, you know, I love you, but not for breaking my arm.
Amazing.
And so did I read, Adam, that you used to then travel back to Brazil to learn more jiu-jitsu in the early days?
Yeah. That was the only way, right? It was either that or those crappy copy of a copy of a copy of a copy of a copy of the Gracie jiu-jitsu videotapes.
Yeah. People these days don't understand that, because anything, you know, they've got BJJ Fanatics, they've got YouTube, they've got everything at their fingertips, yeah? Yeah. When you started, you had to go back to the source to get
your... And this is just my take of why I think us Australian jiu-jitsu competitors, right? Even though we're considered to the rest of the world, like especially the pool of athletes that you have in America, right, and in Brazil, is that we I mean, also just our sporting nature, but we didn't have the privilege of so many good athletes to watch and learn from, and coaches to learn under. Is that we kind of had to figure it out, not ourselves, but, you know, trial and error, and then whatever that we could, right? I mean, like, the way that I look at it is that the original jiu-jitsu athletes in Australia and coaches were like, we'd suck the marrow out of the bone, so to speak, you know? Like, so we had to make do with what we got. And then whenever I went to Brazil, I always used to hear other Brazilian athletes going, man, you Australians are A, like, tough, and B, you guys are good athletes and really willing to get put through the meat grinder to learn, you know? So I remember I used to go to Brazil and they used to think I was a bit of a nut. You know, they always used to make fun of me, right? Brazilian way, right? Also a bit of a background. My auntie, old time family friend, my godmother, she's from Salvador, Brazil.
Oh, wow.
But grew up in Curitiba. So I used to go off class and write notes, sweat dripping, trying to make sure that the pen doesn't blot when you're writing down and the ink spreading all over the paper. And then I used to crack the shit because I'm thinking, now I'm drawing holes and I'm just boring into my notebook. And then I used to have a video cassette and recorder that I also used to use as a tool to help me learn Portuguese, right?
Wow.
So I'll go off to the mat and, you know, save my little thing in the tape recorder and then go back home and then write notes. So, But also I used to think as learning martial arts wasn't just learning about the technique. Yuki Nakai put it in a pretty cool way. Martial communication, because the benefit of going to another country, not just being shit scared, but going to another country, you're learning another language, you're meeting new people, your social environment's different, you're learning a new language, you know? So there's all these benefits to education, you know? Mm. So martial communication and martial education.
Man, that is probably...
And that's the beauty about martial arts, right?
Because
when you look at martial arts, right, it's hard and soft, right? Martial being military, arts, right, being fine or expressive, right? You don't really have a chance to get on a bat. I'm going to express myself. No, but martial arts, it teaches you, it tries to teach you, or I try to learn from it, that you're learning the hard and the soft, right? I mean, like in karate, yeah, goju, like goju ryu, right? Hard and soft, right? So there's a lot, like the languages, the arts, the culture, and then you got the martial, right? the discipline, the hardship, the physical exertion, and all that kind of stuff.
Mm.
You know, because when I was learning with back in the day in Carlson Gracie, a lot of our instructors had a judo background, so they ran their jiu-jitsu classes very similar to judo. So like Zamario, Mario Sperry in Porto Alegre, Fernando Yamazaki, who's, you know, like, you know who Fernando Yamazaki is, right? Anyone who's done jiu-jitsu or judo in Brazil. And my instructor in Malaysia, he was one of the first Malaysians to train under Isao Inokuma and Nobuyuki Sato sensei in Japan. He was a exchange student. So you know, like I've always loved judo, and my mates, you know, in Malaysia and in Australia had a judo and jiu-jitsu background. You know, I think I like Morgan Davies in Sydney. He used to come and train with us. And then I used to train at Sydney University. Good buddy of mine, Alex Chu, used to compete in judo for New South Wales. So I was always brought up with judo and jiu-jitsu side by side.
Amazing, brother. You know, I was, before we were thinking about naming this part, I was thinking about naming this podcast "How to Do a Kimura with the Feet," but I
think brilliant.
The best name for the episode and the best way to end this episode is with martial communication. The best way to name it, you know, I think Kim and I are in agreement there.
Agreed. So any final words, Adam? Any words of wisdom for our listeners to wrap it up? We're nearly out of time. Just a couple of minutes.
I suppose, like, if someone who's just starting their jiu-jitsu journey, right, the best advice that I can give is never assume how a class starts, right? Always just make that little extra effort to ask, right? Don't assume, because that kind of act shows respect by itself, right? That shows a lot. And if an instructor can see that and appreciate it, mate, you'll automatically be one of his favorite students, right? And with instructors that get frustrated sometimes, especially if they're starting out in their jiu-jitsu journey as a jiu-jitsu instructor, patience and compassion, right? Mm-hmm. Because we were them back in the day, right? And just a little bit of compassion and a little bit of patience will pay off dividends, you know? So that's all I would like to impart.
Thanks so much, brother. Really appreciate
that. No worries, man.
Awesome episode.
No worries.
Awesome.
Guys, thank you for having me on. And to Lance Darnell, you know, he's a legend.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's a legend so much so. So that one straightens.
Girl, Lance's fault. All right.
All love.
I have to have a listen out because he said, I've been asking for a little bit to get him on. A few people have asked to get him on this show, and his answer to me was, he will only come on if you do. So now that you've been on, Lance, you've been called out. You need to come on as our guest. So keep a listen out for him. Are you going to be coming back to Australia anytime, Adam? Or do you have
hopefully I'll get to come back. I was actually... My wife and I were kind of in the process of looking to come back home to either Sydney or Melbourne. And I was just talking to Lance about it. And also I was talking to Liam Reznikov.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, in regards to moving, I think it'll be maybe in a couple of years. But for visits, yeah, I reckon we'll be back home in around July, or if not latest by just before Chrissy.
Awesome.
Fantastic. Awesome. Well, hopefully we will catch you. Look forward to that. And we'll have this episode out in a couple of weeks. If you could share it on your social media, we would love that. And
for sure.
Thank you once again. And
cheers, guys. Peace out. Catch you later.
Peace out, guys. Thank you. Thank you, Anthony. Thank you, Kim.